Welcome to Money, Markets and Masterminds, a CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment and strategic decision making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. Today is our fourth episode of an underlying series in partnership with Morningstar South Africa and their head of investments, Sean Neertling, called Mind Over Markets. It provides the latest insights on monthly investment trends by exploring key market developments, whether it's equities, fixed income, commodities, or alternative investments. Nearly 2.5 years after the US Federal Reserve kicked off a massive increase in interest rates, fueled by surging inflation, of course, the bond market now appears to be heading in a new direction. It is widely believed that the Fed will start cutting interest rates this month at its policy setting meeting come September the 18th. The CME FedWatch tool shows that future markets are pricing in about 65% chance of a 25 basis point cut, while the probability of a more aggressive 50 basis point cut is around 35%. To show how expectations have shifted, a month ago the market was expecting only a 4% chance of a 50 basis point cut. However, following a weaker than expected American jobs report showing unemployment rising to 4.3% in July, recession fears have begun to surface. The August report drops this Friday, so there are a few unknowns still about, including what this all means for bonds going forward. So here to help me make sense of it all, I have Morningstar South Africa's head of investments, Sean Neertling, in studio. Welcome back, Sean.
Thanks, Ruan. Looking forward to the discussion.
Can you give us a quick summary of what investors are grappling with when it comes to bond markets? It almost appears that the market has struggled to find direction. What do you think is at the center of that?
Yeah, I think that's a really good starting point for fixed income markets in the current environment. So, you know, I think the uncertainty around inflation and interest rates may have eased, but hasn't gone away completely. So on the last podcast, we spoke about the certainty of uncertainty. And I think that framework holds particularly well for bond and fixed income markets in the current environment. So just because there's a strong belief that the Federal Reserve is likely to cut rates, for example, in September, it doesn't mean that they definitely will. I think the Fed has repeatedly shown it's in no hurry to cut interest rates. And you've really seen the Fed move to becoming a lot more data dependent, almost completely backward looking in terms of its policy making. So part of that is because inflation has proved to be a lot more difficult to tame, I suppose, than initially expected. And we're seeing this not only from economic commentators on the Fed, but also from companies that are reporting quarterly earnings. So I think if you look at the risks in market at the moment, I think what investors are grappling with is that, you know, by potentially delaying cutting rates, especially after a very aggressive rate hiking cycle, the likelihood of the so-called softer landing really declines. And by softer landing, what we're speaking about here is the economy, you know, not necessarily falling into a recession. That's very uncommon, you know, following rate hikes that we've seen. And it's only really occurred once in the early 90s. And the difficulty is that you've got this lagged effect where the current data probably understates the risk that consumers are under more stress than what they really appear to be. So I think that's really the, I suppose, the framework in terms of, you know, how the inflation and interest rate picture is stacking up. A lot clearer, but still, you know, some uncertainty. That being said, though, the current environment does leave the door open for a rate cut in September, and markets are pricing that. We are faced with a global consumer and a global position where we're seeing rising costs and falling consumer demand. So there's no guarantee that it will happen in September, but data is really supportive of that first cut as markets are pricing in September.
Sean, for me, August was a really strange month. A lot of focus fell on equity markets, especially around the unwinding of carry trades, which effectively led to a massive drop in Japanese and US growth stock valuation in just one day. But share prices have recovered quite quickly after that, and the rough seas have calmed down. But Sean, what do you think happened here? And what were some of your key observations for bond markets in particular?
Yeah, and I think, the equity markets tend to be a lot more transparent. So you saw a lot of the pricing activity there, particularly in terms of what was reported. But bond markets, weren't necessarily spared that sell-off and subsequent recovery. So if we go back, there were really two, I suppose, sets of economic data that spooked markets. The first was, the Bank of Japan unexpectedly raising interest rates to, I think, what was a 15-year high, and really outlining plans to scale back this massive bond buying program that they've been running. They've also signaled subsequent to that that they may continue to hike interest rates if inflation prints above their 2% target. So with increased yen borrowing costs, what you saw was this large disinvestment from the Japanese stock market in particular, and that so-called carry trade that people have been talking about, I suppose, more recently starting to unwind. So I think that was probably the major market trigger unsettling global investors, both on the equity and on the bond side. And then the second factor was probably, US economic data, like you mentioned at the start, showing weaker job growth and a slowdown in wage growth as well, which potentially signals the economy is not as resilient as the market believes. So that was, I suppose, from a macro perspective, the surprise that caught investors somewhat off guard. Market performance, like you rightly said, was quite odd off the back of that. And it was almost a metaphorical tale of two cities with an extreme market sell-off, let's say at the beginning of the month in August, recovering fairly quickly, and almost a business as usual, in terms of growth and risk assets, basically then, recovering a lot of those losses. So I think there's a few key markers that recovery might potentially understate. It did show that parts of the market were probably priced ahead of fundamentals. So despite the market recovery, we do think there's a few important takeaways there. If we just sort of circle back to fixed income, we had a few observations there which we think are fairly important. I think one, the market seems to be fairly certain, like I mentioned, that this first rate cut will occur in September, especially given weaker job and cool inflation data. So you've seen fixed income assets move off the back of that. Particularly, we saw, fixed income assets reprice at a broad market level, but particularly in US treasuries that we follow quite closely. So we saw this both at the short and the long end of the curve. And also on average, we saw US fixed income assets perform relatively better than what we would see as more opportunistic, let's say, emerging market fixed income. And lastly, again, it's not an asset or an asset class that's as widely covered from a South African perspective. But we have also seen spread assets, for example, global corporate credit. It was actually quite volatile where we saw initial spread widening, and that closed quite quickly when we saw basically money moving back into risk assets.
Let's talk about US treasuries, which are largely seen as proxies for global risk-free rates. But it's also well known that the US has a debt problem after running large-scale quantitative easing programs following the financial crisis. But surely someday someone has to repay this debt at some point. So can you talk me through how investors should be thinking about that? And do you still feel value in US treasuries? Do you still see value in US treasuries in the current environment?
Yeah, and I think you mentioned it. The US has a fairly sizable debt problem. Unfortunately, there are no free lunches in financial markets, and eventually somebody will have to pay back that debt that's accumulated on government balance sheets. Especially since the financial crisis, when large quantitative easing programs were run. So, how that debt is managed is probably one of the biggest considerations for both investors and fixed income investors in aggregate. A useful way to think about that US, I suppose, yield curve in terms of the responsiveness is that the short end of the curve, and here we're really talking, I suppose, 1 to 3 years, that tends to be more focused on monetary policy. So the Fed's decisions in terms of, upping rates or in this case, cutting rates and in what size that will be. Where that longer end of the curve, which you'll know is really inverted. So the US curve is pretty much inverted at this point in time. The longer end of that curve, and we're talking sort of 10 years plus, is somewhat more impacted by fiscal policy. And that's where, investors are paying a lot of attention to the debt that's been accumulated and how I suppose how the government there from a fiscal perspective is thinking about taxes and expenditure. So I think when we look at it from an investment perspective, what this means is that duration is probably one of the most important considerations for global fixed income investors at this point in time. not only the level, but also how you combine different assets or position, you know, on that US yield curve to implement duration and other asset class fundamental views. So the US has a wide range of investable instruments. And obviously with that inverted yield curve, how you take on duration is going to be important, especially sort of going 10 years out. So the way that we are currently thinking about it at Morningstar, again, with cash paying around 5%, we think, you know, you're getting real yields from cash for the first time in a relatively long time. And what we are doing is implementing, I suppose, what people would call a so-called barbell approach. We're pretty much, we're balancing our exposure out at the long end of the curve, so 10 years out, with more muted or contained exposure in cash, and also in what we would see as lower duration in that 1 to 3 year area of the curve. But I'd say that would probably be one of the more important things for investors to get right in an environment that's as uncertain as the one we're sitting in at the moment.
Sean, the average institutional investor would mostly be interested in government bonds, you know, especially US treasuries, and maybe corporate credit as an alternative avenue to access fixed income markets. But can you take us through what your full ideal investable universe looks like and how you are looking at those assets currently from a valuation perspective?
Yeah, everyone. I mean, that's a really good question. I think access to fixed income in South Africa, especially global fixed income, is relatively constrained for funds that we manage on behalf of our clients at Morningstar. Our universe, you know, can be particularly wide and does require a fair amount of fundamental work to understand. So maybe I'll just talk through a few of those. I think the one that most people can access is obviously government and sovereign debt, particularly on the developed market side and US treasuries. So again, just to reinforce the thinking there, you know, I think with US treasuries currently yielding on a 10-year basis just under 4%, we do think that they still offer value. They've come in quite a lot from the 5%, you know, a couple of months ago. But we also think the investment case for US treasuries is much broader than just valuation, especially in multi-asset portfolios, where they do typically behave, you know, opposite to equities. You know, sometimes that correlation does break down. But again, what we found, like I mentioned before, is where you position on the US curve is probably more important at this point in time, given the inverted nature of that. If we turn to corporate credit again, we are able to access at Morningstar again the so-called spread assets, which we don't think are particularly cheap. And this applies both to high yield credit and investment grade. So we think the starting yields are attractive. And again, that's because benchmark rates have really moved, you know, a lot higher over the last 2 years, given the rise in interest rates. But we are actually very wary of credit and liquidity risks. So we don't necessarily think that those spreads on both investment grade and high yield compensate investors, you know, for those allocations. And again, we've seen in August, you know, just how quickly that risk on trade can unwind. So how, again, you access that opportunity in credit is going to be important. And then one of the more, I suppose, interesting assets which we do access on behalf of certain clients is emerging market debt, and especially local currency emerging market debt, which we think is something that's priced on the cheap side of what we think is fair. We'd probably include South Africa in that bucket as well. So just in short, you know, those currencies are massively undervalued, and the spreads on the underlying bonds, again, are not particularly expensive. So local currency, emerging market debt is something which we are positive about. The hard currency or dollar issues, we're probably somewhat more circumspect about, but we do think emerging market debt, again, offers a really good opportunity. And then I think last but not least is cash at 5%, which again is accessible to most investors, but how it's used in a portfolio is probably one of the more important considerations. So it provides optionality and liquidity, again, in markets which are more volatile than probably what they should be. So we'd probably warrant against, you know, overweighting cash, because again, trying to time markets might not be the best idea, but in the context of a balanced portfolio, using cash, you know, combined with treasuries, emerging market debt, and some types of credit can actually unlock and position portfolios really well for clients with those mandates.
You talk about emerging markets, which South Africa falls into that wider definition. So where do you see South Africa in this global picture? What is the domestic outlook for inflation and interest rates? And what are your views on South African bonds? Well, SA sovereign bonds, that is.
Sure. So I think the simplest way to look at domestic inflation and interest rates is that South Africa is effectively a price taker and would very much need to follow the trend in global and especially US markets. So almost a prerequisite for domestic rate cuts is the Fed moving first. Again, if we fast forward and just look at what markets are pricing, if that first Fed rate cut does come in September, it would probably suggest that the SARB, you know, has scope to decrease rates on our side as well. Recent rand strength would largely support that. So on the balance of probabilities, we would expect lower rates going into the last quarter of the year. South Africa really imports inflation. And if you have a weak currency and oil prices that are fairly well contained, you know, it does leave the door open again, you know, for a bit of easing on the policy side. In terms of our view on South African bonds, more specifically rand-denominated bonds, I think our views at Morningstar remained unchanged for almost the last 2 years. We are overweight South African bonds in rand-denominated portfolios, and it's our highest conviction idea. You know, that includes, you know, SA equities, which are really well-priced. So I think, you know, this was and still is a lot of macro in the market, and that's tending to obscure, I suppose, the actual fundamentals of the investment. But even if you take inflation, I suppose, at the upper end of the SARB's 3 to 6% band, you know, you're still able to buy 10-year government bonds in South Africa at a real yield in excess of 3%, which we think is pretty good value. So I think we've really seen South African bonds as a high conviction idea for probably the last 2 years. And the positioning recently and the performance recently has largely benefited client portfolios in terms of those numbers coming through.
Sean, you mentioned earlier that it's not a certainty that the US Fed will cut rates. And as we all know, the only certainty is that there is uncertainty. So where do you, in all of that, where do you think global interest rates and inflation will ultimately end up? And more importantly, how are you positioning portfolios for those expectations?
Yeah, I think that's the, you know, the million dollar or the million rand question. Again, we think, you know, we don't have any ability to predict or forecast where interest rates and inflation will be in 3, 6, or 12 months time. Again, I think if you rewind to the start of the year, you know, these expectations of cuts were very aggressive, and it hasn't really materialized in that way. So I think, you know, when we think about constructing portfolios, what we try to do is get an idea of, you know, what these extremes potentially look like. We do think that just given the data, it is largely supportive of a cut in September. But further on, you know, we think that, again, maintaining a portfolio that's positioned for different outcomes and a potential range of different outcomes is probably the best way that we can go about protecting and growing client capital. So just in terms of bringing that back to portfolios, in terms of positioning, you know, currently we're maintaining positions that we think are likely to improve the what we would call portfolio robustness, just from a defensive perspective. And they're, like I mentioned to you, you know, positions in U.S. treasuries, you know, that are somewhat differently correlated to emerging market debt is important. And then within, I suppose, that fixed income component, again, we don't really think that we have any ability to predict where interest rates and inflation will end up. What that means is pretty much that we're maintaining duration that we would see what we would call neutral levels. So not taking, you know, positions that are too different from the benchmark. And again, this is just to mitigate the risks of, you know, potentially being wrong, inflation that could potentially be higher for longer, or an economic slowdown in the short term. We're in a world where I think, you know, normal doesn't look what it did, what it looked like for the last 10 years. And that's before you price in all the different geopolitical risks. So I think we are somewhat prudent in terms of how we are approaching this, and where we are a bit more opportunistic is where the fundamentals of certain assets and asset classes have shifted. So I think that's really how we are thinking about, let's say, the defensive positioning. And we combine that really with more opportunistic positions. Again, like I mentioned, in emerging market debt on the local currency side, where we think that the dollar is expensive and some of these emerging markets are cheap, that really allows us to be a bit more opportunistic. But that would largely be underpinned by fundamental views on those assets, as opposed to any view on interest rates or inflation.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And as we navigate these uncertain times, staying informed and ahead of the curve seems to be more important than ever. Thank you, Sean, for joining us for another episode of Minds Over Market with Morningstar. We look forward to meeting with you next month for another in-depth discussion and some actionable insights. To all our Citywire South African listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money, Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uester, and my producer, Vera Lowa de Silva from the Citywire Studios team. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and all Citywire South Africa podcasts and videos are also available on its homepage at www.citywire.co.za. Go register and have a look at our wealth of multimedia content. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.